The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Cavanagh with you until 12 noon today. Lots to talk about on the show, both local and national. But as we always say, the absolute centre of this programme is your news, your views, your perceptions and your perspectives on the issues of the day, or the issues indeed you want to see raised on the programme. If you do want to let us know what you want to talk about, you can make contact with us. You can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Call us on 074 91 25000. If you're outside the dialing area, it's 00353 74 91 25000. You can use social media. We're at Highland Radio on X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. We're across other social media platforms as well. And indeed, you can watch the show live. You can see the Zoom calls as they happen and indeed see our studio guests as they speak to us in studio, not least our representative from An Garda Síochána, because it being a Tuesday, today we will of course have our Garda information slot that's coming up shortly after 10 o'clock this morning. So you can watch the show unfold via our Facebook channel, Highland Radio Ireland, or indeed, our Facebook channels, Highland Radio News and Sport and Highland Radio, and our YouTube channel, which is Highland Radio Ireland. We're fierce technical altogether here. But however you choose to engage, whether it be online, whether it be on radio, as is traditional, however you choose to do it, you're very welcome to the 9 till noon show, and we look forward to your interaction and to your contribution to the programme this morning. We'll start with a look at the papers. The Irish Independent, it's an interesting headline. It's an issue you hear come up from time to time, and it's raising its head again. Farmers squeezed out of land deals by rich investors. Farmers are being squeezed out as wealthy buyers seek to snap up parcels of land across the country, and that's pushing up prices. The Farming Independent Land Price Review for the first half of the year has found the land sold under the hammer averaged 18,890 across the country last year per acre, and that's a 17% jump on the previous year. And we'll take a look at the Donegal figures perhaps a little bit later on. An interesting story on the inside, actually. Blood test can predict 67 major diseases up to 10 years before they strike. Now, they say forearmed is forewarned. And when it comes to medicine, more and more what's becoming important is diseases and potential illnesses are being detected ever more quickly. And this is a really, really important one, that blood test. Experts discover that dozens of diseases have distinctive protein signatures which act like fingerprints. They flag up the presence of conditions up to a decade before diagnosis, and diseases that can be spotted include motor neuron, diabetes, heart failure, leukemia, cataracts, several cancers, gout, liver, cirrhosis, arthritis and angina. And we're coming to a stage, I think, where more and more we'll be able to head off a lot of illnesses at the pass, and we'll get to the point where we will know that we have maybe a low-grade illness or a low-grade whatever, but we won't be too concerned about it because it'll have been caught so quickly and caught so early that it'll be at the really, really early stage, and it can be managed and it can be monitored. And once you're being monitored, and I can tell you this from personal experience, once you have something and you catch it early and you're being monitored, then it's just a matter of, you know, you go to hospitals, and as I always say to a friend, I have to go to a hospital at least once a year, and the biggest worry I have is, where am I going to get parked? And as long as that's the biggest worry I have, I reckon, hey, we're really ahead on that one. So that blood test predicting up to 67 major diseases up to 10 years before they strike. That's according to Sarah Napton, writing on the inside of the Irish Independent this morning. It's a very interesting one indeed, and we will watch that one with interest, because when it comes to medical matters, the key words always are get checked. If you feel there is anything potentially there, get checked. And if there were two words you wanted to on the inside of your eyelids, they are the two words when it comes to medicine. Get checked, because more and more these tests are picking things up earlier and earlier and earlier. And that is really, really important. Irish Times front page, Sinn Féin pledges new migration system in policy shift. And that's something Sinn Féin doing a lot of soul searching, I think, after the local and European elections. The party looking ahead to a general election very probably in the autumn of this year. The first 2 weeks of November do appear to be the favoured date, probably in and around about the 14th or so of November, which will be pretty much a week after the US election. So, hey, it's going to be a really, really heavy October and November when it comes to electoral campaigning on both sides of the Atlantic, I strongly suspect. Pelosi joins Democrat grandees in backing Harris. That's another front page story there. And the Vice President Kamala Harris does appear to be getting the support of the various Democratic bigwigs. Nancy Pelosi, the latest to come out in her support. She has, we're now told, got the necessary support that she needs in order to seek that nomination. They're going to have some online forums in the week before the Democratic Convention, the convention taking place in mid-August. So it certainly seems that it'll be a Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump battle for the American presidency. Now, can Kamala Harris get the support in swing states? We had that discussion yesterday with Raymond. Raymond had his doubts on that regard. And there's also the feeling that Kamala Harris is coming from a sort of a position of not as much support as she would like. But we'll have to see what happens. We'll see how it pans out. I mean, very few people 4 months out were giving Donald Trump any chance against Hillary Clinton. And we saw how that one panned. So I would not be writing anything off yet. Trump probably is still favoured, probably still in the ascendancy, but I would be writing nothing off at this point. We'll have to see how it pans out. Again, inside the Irish Times, unions say new HSE staffing strategy will see the suppression of 2,000 posts. And we discussed this yesterday, that unions are looking at potentially taking action as they fear a number of vacancies will not be filled. The strategy introduced last week, they believe, will mean the abolition of 2,000 vacant funded posts will not be reinstated, and that will have a serious impact on patient safety. Unions have sent a letter to the HSC arguing that the pay and numbers strategy was put in place without consultation and fails to meet the HSC's legal obligations. The HSE Chief Executive Bernard Luster last week said a new employment ceiling would be set at 125,420 whole-time equivalent positions. That, he says, it's the number of occupied paid posts in place at the end of December last year. So we'll have to see how that pans out. But a lot of discussions, I think, coming up in the coming weeks and months between the HSC and the unions and the possibility of action over this whole issue of staffing can't at this point be ruled out. Just put this away from me. I think I'm feeding back a bit on this, actually. Looking at the Irish Daily Mail this morning, a lot of coverage of the Bishop Eamon Casey situation. There was a documentary last night on television, and there was also a lot of discussion on national radio about Eamon Casey and his legacy, and specifically the fact that he was being treated and was regarded as a predator. And the niece of the former bishop told an RTE1 documentary last night that she had horror at his stately funeral in the cathedral. And a lot of pushback now at the fact that the body of Eamon Casey is buried in the cathedral in the Diocese of Tuam. And a lot of people are saying, well, maybe what we should now be doing is removing Eamon Casey's body from the cathedral, because he doesn't deserve to have that burial as a former bishop and have that honour given to him. It was indeed it would be the church equivalent of, not a state funeral, but certainly the funeral of a dignitary. And to be buried in the cathedral is an honour which is preserved for very few people, and a lot of people arguing that Eamon Casey does not deserve that honour, and there should be consideration of exhuming his remains from the cathedral and burying it somewhere more appropriate. If you have a view on that, do get in touch. As we said, text us 086 60 25000, or call us 07491 25000. We're open to your comments and we look forward to them. Looking at the Red Tops this morning, all the Red Tops have the same main story: girl 11 dies in balcony fall horror. And that sad and tragic story of 11-year-old Clodagh Phelan from County Wicklow, who died after falling from a balcony on holiday in Mallorca. She was on her last day of a Club Mac holiday in Alcudia with her family when the tragedy occurred. Pictures too of the homecoming of Claire as they returned home to Ennis last night with the Sam Maguire Cup. Not the Sam, oh God, Donald, with the Liam McCarthy Cup. I do beg your pardon, for Liam McCarthy, not the Sam Maguire. Again, on the inside, so much promise snatched away. Clodagh 11 dies after falling 65 feet from apartment's balcony, and tributes have been pouring in to the 11-year-old, and such a sad, sad story that will indeed. Looking at the Irish Sun this morning, Kamala in $50 million boost again. Kamala Harris getting that funding from her party colleagues. Inside, Roy's come a cropper. Guard bars star from set. Corey's Roy Cropper came a cropper when the security staff on the soap set failed to recognise him. And David Nielsen, 75, the actor who plays Roy, was not allowed in because he wasn't recognised when he tried to get on set for filming. And I'm sure that's one embarrassed security guard there. Also looking inside the Sun this morning. And there's an interesting one. Shake up on the way they claim for Strictly. Strictly stars arrived to start training for the new series yesterday as BBC consider a cull of long-serving dancers after alleged abusive behaviour. Up to five professionals, we're told, could face the axe next year in the wake of the scandal surrounding Giovanni Pernice and Graziano De Prima. And that's a story in the Irish Sun, so if you're a Strictly fan, there could be change afoot. Finally, the Star. Again, it's exactly the same story on the front page. The story of that 11-year-old, Clodagh Phelan, who fell to her death in Mallorca. And a very sad story indeed. And also looking inside, Callan shock cancer news. RTE star Oliver Callan shocked his radio listeners with news that he's been diagnosed with skin cancer. The comedian explained his long absence from the radio show, which saw Maura Duran take over, was because he was diagnosed with a basal cell carcinoma and needed to undergo surgery to remove it. What happened, he said, was like thousands of us with our Irish skin. I got one of those mild skin cancers. And we wish Oliver the best, and hopefully he will make a full recovery, as indeed he should, because again, and I said this earlier, and I will always bang on about this, and I will never stop saying this because it's so important. If you feel there is anything amiss on any part of your body, get it checked. Because sometimes you get it, and most of the time you get it checked and it's nothing, and you can go home and think, yeah, it was nothing, it was a mole. Grand, no problem. And if it's just a mole, happy days, it's just a mole. But maybe it's not just a mole. And in Oliver's case, he discovered it wasn't just a mole, but he got it checked, he got it diagnosed, he got it sorted, and he's got it dealt with. And he's now back at work, and that's the way we want it to be. As we know, there was a global IT outage on Friday last, and a number of sectors were discussed. And one of the sectors that was discussed was the holiday sector. And we know that some tour operators were badly hit. And I have a family member who's in the travel business, and I know they had a number of situations to deal with. And a lot of the time when we hear about these issues, we think in terms of people who are about to travel and how they are being affected. And sometimes our focus can be on, oh, if someone was supposed to catch a flight today and go on their holidays, how are they going to be affected? However, there is another side of that coin. And that side of the coin is, what about people who are on their holidays and are due to come home and can't? And that's exactly what happened to three friends who had gone to Greece on a post-Leaving Cert holiday and were joined by two of the girls and by one of their dads as well. First of all, going to go to Zoe. Zoe, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Zoe, you went to Greece with some friends. You'd flown from Belfast. You'd booked the holiday with TUI. However, when you tried to get home on Friday, tell us what happened.
So we went to the airport on Friday, and the queues were mental, and we had to wait 2 hours to try and put our suitcases under the airplane. And whenever we finally done this, we went through to the duty-free, and we looked at the screen, and it told us to go to gate one. And we were all so confused because it was very early before our flight. So we went in, went to passport control, and then we went to gate one, but there was another flight in there. And we couldn't find anybody else to ask, so we had to ask all the passengers that were standing around. And they said the screens weren't updating for hours, and they just weren't helping us at all. And
Were there any TUI reps in the airport at the time?
No, there was no TUI reps, and there was the only workers we could see was the ones working in the food places, and they didn't know anything either. Hmm. So we were just standing with no help.
Now we're joined on line two by Mickey, Zoe's dad. And Mickey, I suppose Zoe is 18, she's an adult, but when you're a dad and you know your daughter's in trouble someplace else, she's not an adult as far as you're concerned, she's a child who needs your help.
I definitely agree. She's only turned 18. It was the first holiday away without parents and stuff like that. It was a constant worry prior to go. And then when you knew they were coming home that day, you thought everything was going to sort of run smooth, if you know what I mean. Mm. And next thing you get the word then, they're not coming back. And then there's no notion of when anything was going to be set up for them to come back. No communication from TUI on their side whatsoever. I actually phoned them there on Friday night when the flight was delayed.
Yeah.
They found out, can they get accommodation, because they didn't know when the next flight was going to get out of there. And the TUI rep I was speaking to was just very, very cheeky, ignorant. They go,
there's no accommodation available for them. That's thinking, right, no accommodation. It's their responsibility to look after their customers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I was sending to the woman from TUI, and she goes, there's no accommodation. I thought, right, no bar. And I go, can you use not a short accommodation or whatever? And they go, there's no accommodation. They have to find their own accommodation. I said, oh, right, can you not do it? No, I mean, you just have to look after them.
Yeah.
Next thing, there's no accommodation. I don't have time for this, and just hung up the phone. You know, so it was just mayhem.
So, I mean, my understanding is that Zoe finally got back to home on Monday at about 12 noon. So how yeah. did Zoe, going back to yourself, how did you actually spend the weekend? What did you do between Friday and Monday?
We stood in passport control for 13 hours and we didn't know what to do. We were all panicking because we were by ourselves with no adults with us to help us. So we were asking all the passengers. We finally got through to get our luggage then and we went up to the rep. We got completely ignored and my friend has diabetes, which he wasn't allowed to stand in long queues, which we informed the reps and they just said, we don't have time, you're going to have to wait. So we had to wait anyways, even with a medical cert. We went up to the desk then after one of the reps said they don't have time and was skipping us going to the adults. We think it's because we were younger. And then whenever we went up, I said, oh, we need a fridge, we need accommodation because of Elm's diabetes. And she laughed in my face and goes, what do you want us to do about it? Find your own accommodation. And I said, I don't know how to because my mom and daddy helped me book the whole holiday. And she goes, well, you have your own phone in your hand, go do it yourself. And she was saying, we're wasting our time. And she slapped the table, stood up and goes, you know what, I'm not even dealing with you. And she left us standing in the airport.
And you personally also had a, shall we say, a sanitary issue that you had to deal with and you found yourself without the requisites and had to ask people for help in that regard. And I'm sure that was very embarrassing.
Yeah, that was embarrassing. There was no, all the workers, I'd asked 6 times, could I leave password control? And I finally got out then and the airport was like, no, we don't even do them here. So I'd ask everybody else then.
And I'm sure that isn't something you want to do because you would have expected to have been home at that point in time. So did you end up sleeping in the airport or did you manage to get a hotel for Saturday and Sunday?
No, we had to sleep on the airport floor on the Friday and then in the morning it was freezing cold, the floor. And Ellen, the one with diabetes, she woke up in the morning with swollen ankles and whenever you touched them they'd stay dented and she had to go to the emergency room. And she had to go to doctors whenever she was back and everything. Yeah. And they said it could be from stress and everything from the airport, like, because they left her on the floor. And her blood sugars were gone all weird and all because she couldn't change her pump because they didn't give us accommodation.
Also joined on the line by Holly. Holly, good morning.
Good morning.
Holly, I mean, the stories we're hearing from Zoe and from her dad, Mickey, I mean, they're stories we've heard from others and they echo your experience as well.
Yeah.
Tell us your story.
Overall, I just think it was a horrible experience. And for the three of us, to be only just turned 18, our first flight out in a different country without our parents, is just horrible. And then I remember asking one of the 2A reps, I was like, so you're just going to put us out in the street? I was at 18 years old, not knowing what to do. And she was like, yeah, that's what I'm going to have to do. And like, you can't expect 3 18-year-olds to know where they're going in a city that we didn't even stay in for that week.
So, I mean, in terms of, we know that one of your friends had to go to the emergency room because of the issue with the ankle, which I take it is directly linked to her diabetes. I mean, you're now into Saturday. You're not home until Monday. So you've still got effectively 48 hours from Saturday to try and actually get yourself home. I mean, talk us through the actual steps that led to you eventually getting home. How did you get the flight? And did TUI finally come through and actually help you? Or did you have to help yourself the whole way along?
We had to help ourselves along. If it wasn't, like, we got meal vouchers for inside, but our friend Elm, she is also celiac, and we informed them of that, but they didn't care. Like, she could have had Burger King on past security, but on the Saturday, like, we weren't allowed past security, so she, like, didn't eat the whole time because she couldn't. There was nothing for her.
So effectively what happened was you had gone through passport control, you'd gone into the actual departures lounge itself, you were at the gate, but you were at the gate for a flight that wasn't leaving. So TUI weren't informing the airport then that the flight was cancelled, so you should have been allowed back into the main departures area or the main airport. So you were actually stuck flight side, as it were, with no flight.
Yeah, we were told on the Friday, we had, like, our parents contacted Belfast Airport, and then they informed us that the flight was cancelled, except for the screens in Corfu Airport was just telling us it was delayed, and that there was, like, all the other flights had a time next to them, delayed until, say, 1 o'clock, but ours just continued to say delayed because they had no idea when the plane was coming.
I want to go back to Mickey, because, Mickey, I was talking to a friend of mine last night who had another incident with a relative who got stuck trying to fly out with TUI that was linked with this, and she was saying that there was no information to the extent that she knew the flight was cancelled by ringing the destination airport and being told by them that it was cancelled, when her friend, who was in another airport waiting to fly out, was still seeing delayed on the screen and still expected to get out. So it appears that one of the problems here with TUI, and one of the key problems here, is communication. And TUI aren't communicating with their own people, they're not communicating with their clients and their customers, and they don't even appear to be communicating with the airports they're flying into and out of.
It's crazy as well, even when I phoned TUI as well, because they've only turned over 18 as well. They wouldn't give me any information of what was sort of happening, because it's none of my business, they're adults. No, if you know what I mean. And so I was just really communicating with Zoe over and back, phoning what's going on. And there was no communication. As I said, I was speaking to one of the reps, and she was just very cheeky, and she just hung up the phone with me and stuff like that there then. But even on Saturday morning, they weren't actually told, right, you aren't flying until almost about 3 o'clock, right, you aren't leaving. No, it was about 1 o'clock, sorry. There are no flights, you aren't leaving today or whatever. So they're just bundled out onto the street, and my wife, she went on booking.com or whatever, and she got them an apartment. You know, it was about, about 15, 20 minutes outside, at our own expense, you know what I mean? TUI didn't even, the TUI reps and us is, look, everything that you pay for now, that you just have to keep your receipt, and then you have to claim it back. You know, but what would happen if there's parents there but didn't have the money? You know what I mean? Their children would have been stuck there, and they would have been stuck in the airport the fall weekend. So they went out in the apartment then, but they still had to come put out of the apartment then at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
But no one from Eton, are they getting a flight today or they're not, had to come back and go through the whole procedure, going through all passports and everything control to get back into the airport. And they had to sit down, I think it was an hour, 12 hours before they were told anything. And the flight was going to be at 10:40 at night, and then it didn't go until 5 that morning.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. The whole scenario was, I know with Microsoft thing being down and stuff like that there, but it doesn't put your whole verbal communication down, if you know what I mean.
I want to read a statement. We've had a statement from TUI, and this is the statement that TUI have sent us. Now, they haven't, Caroline, put questions to them specifically about your case and the case of Zoe Ellen and Holly. Now, they haven't answered specific questions, saying we will not answer specific customer questions, but we'll share this statement. The statement reads, we would like to apologise to our customers who were impacted by the global IT outage that resulted in some delays and cancellations. Whilst the original IT issue was outside of our control, the impact alongside air traffic control restrictions over the weekend meant we had to cancel some flights and delay some return flights home. We understand how frustrating this would have been and recognise that many of these delays happened when our customers were already at the airport. We would like to assure customers if they are currently overseas, our TUI team will look after them and flights home will be provided. We will continue to update customers with more information and confirm that if a return flight time has changed, we will contact them directly 24 hours before departure. We thank our customers for their understanding and continued patience. Now, that's the statement that they've told us. Now, we understand also that TUI are providing refunds to anyone that had out-of-pocket costs and they'll be giving vouchers off future TUI holidays as recompense. Have you any guarantee from TUI, for instance, that the cost of that apartment is going to be covered, that the cost of meals the girls had to eat on the Saturday and Sunday is going to be covered, that the cost of the emergency department visit is going to be covered? What guarantees have you from TUI? What indications have you from them that they will cover those costs?
The only thing, like, how can you take the word? Because on their terms and conditions, they look after their customers in the first place, of providing accommodation, food, and so on, the drink and stuff like that there. And it was, I think it was 26 hours later, Zoe and all got a food voucher in the airport. You know what I mean? And they didn't provide any accommodation. So how can you go in their word?
Yeah.
And the way they're putting it is, oh, sorry, there's some delays and some cancellations. That's sounding like they're delayed for 2 hours. There's no communication whatsoever. They were 36 hours stuck in an airport.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, by the Saturday, they got out for a couple of hours to go to rest in an apartment. Like, you know, so I think they're just sort of bluffing it, really, by saying, blaming the outage. It's the fact that their team and their staff, just the way they treated the young adults, they're treating them like babies and they wouldn't speak to them and stuff like that. Yeah, that's more I'm sort of angry about, like, you know. Yeah.
Zoe, I want to give the final word to yourself. How do you feel now in terms of future holidays? I mean, will you and the girls go on holiday together again? I mean, I know very many people, when they're in school or college, they go on friends' holidays again and again and again. I mean, can you foresee the three of you or other friends going off together again in the future?
I'd love to go on holidays again with the girls, yeah, but the way, definitely, I don't know about two anymore, because they kept telling us whenever you book, we're here to help, but we were pure terrified and everything, and the help wasn't there. They were pure cheeky, shouting at us like it was our fault. We didn't care about, we did mind about waiting, but it wouldn't have been that bad if they were actually stuck to the word and told us that they will help us and tell us what is happening.
Well, look, Zoe and Holly, thanks indeed for speaking to us. Mickey, thank you for speaking to us as well. Keep in touch with us, Mickey, and let us know if you do what the follow-up, and because we'd be interested in this, what will the follow-up from TUI be in terms of recompense for the accommodation costs, for the other expenses?
Yeah, well don't get me wrong, when Zoe landed back yesterday, we would just know, because they did book it through the TUI shop here up in Derry, and we went up and we were speaking to a lovely lady up there, and she was gobsmacked the way they were treated.
Yeah.
And she goes, they do a good job up there. They try and keep everyone happy. There's nothing on for them to send people on a flight and then be treated like that there. She was disgusted.
Yeah.
And she told us to follow it up straight away. Like, you know what I mean? So I'll definitely get back in and let you know how we get on with it. Like.
And listen, the other question, Zoe and Holly, before I let you go, it would be remiss of me not to ask your friend, Ellen, that has diabetes and ended up in the ED. How is she?
Okay, Mary, but...
Yeah, but not a nice experience, certainly at the end of a holiday.
No, she's very embarrassed and humiliated.
Yeah. Well, look,
was more the fact for Ellen as well that her medical condition was publicised because the previous staff was being that cheeky and ignorant.
Yeah.
That she had a sort of threat and saying, I need refrigerated stuff for me, medication and stuff like that. No one else in the airport should know someone's medical or disabilities, like, you know what I mean?
Well, hopefully there will be lessons learned from this, and it seems certainly lessons do need to be learned, both in the airport and within the company itself. Listen, folks, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us today. I say, do keep in touch and let us know how things go. That's the experience of Zoe, Holly and Ellen when they went on holiday in Greece and they were trying to get home. And I know a lot of people will have had experiences on Friday in both directions as a result of that outage. If you're one of those that had experiences, let us know what your experience was. And if you're in the process of trying to sort out either compensation or recompense for out-of-pocket expenses and so on, get in touch and tell us how things are going, and we'll be keeping an eye on this one over the course of the coming weeks. Right now, we'll take a break. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Some of your comments. Kamala Harris must be of Irish descent from her father's side, as many Irish were sent to the Caribbean as slaves, but she has never acknowledged this. The caller says, for 60 years, a party of councillors went up through the north to see what effect bypasses have on towns. Ballybofey-Stranorra was one of the towns in question. It's still being planned. Now, the Ballybofey-Stranorra bypass is now part of the much-vaunted 10T project. Now, we understand the TEN-T project is due to go before Cabinet very, very shortly. It may even happen this week. And if it gets approval, then it can move on to the next stage. And that, we assume, will include a certain amount of funding for things like compulsory purchase and advanced planning and so on and so forth. So it's hoped that there'll be movement on the Stranraer Ballybuffet bypass, the Twin Towns bypass, much awaited. Now, I was chatting on the show last year to Councillor Patrick McGowan, who's been a member of Donegal County Council now for quite a few years, and I reminded him that I recall a debate in the council chamber earlier on this century, and I was talking to I was covering a meeting with Donegal County Council, and Councillor McGowan was there, and he was speaking passionately about the plan for the Twin Towns bypass and its need. And I remember him make a statement, and I will quote you directly. He said, "Here, look, the way this is being delayed, we mightn't see the Twin Towns bypass until as late as 2010. Which I think says everything that needs to be said about where we are with the Twin Towns bypass. Hopefully an announcement on the TEN-T is due sooner rather than later, and hopefully we will see progress on the Twin Towns bypass. I've been working here on Highland Video for the guts of 34 years. And as far as I recall, the Twin Towns bypass was on the agenda in my first week. And I'm here 34 years, and this debate is older than I am. Now, we were speaking about Kamala Harris and her lineage, and I want to go to Sharon McMenamin, who is joining us on the line. Sharon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, Sharon. Great to talk to you. Sharon, you have dual Irish US citizenship, and you are a Democratic supporter. You're happy the way things have panned out over the past couple of days?
Oh, very much so. It's a bit late, but I'm glad that Joe Biden has stepped aside. His candidacy was just looking less and less viable as the days progressed. But I'm very happy also with response within the Democratic Party. It was great to see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez come on board and support Kamala. People are coming out of the woodwork and seem to be excited and enthused. I was texting with a friend of mine in Philadelphia yesterday, and he said the energy is up. He's hoping they can hang on to it until November, but that energy is definitely been brought up to voters for their choice now.
There had been some concern yesterday that not everyone was coming out to express support for Kamala Harris. Now, Nancy Pelosi's name mentioned, Barack Obama's name mentioned. Now, we know Nancy Pelosi has subsequently come out and given her full backing to Kamala Harris.
Yes.
How important is it that President Obama does the same?
Well, I mean, at this stage, it's another voice in the chorus. I don't know what's transpiring there behind the scenes or what their personal relationship is like, but I think it's only a matter of time before he comes out in support, unless he is looking for it to be more of a horse race at the convention itself. But she's already been collecting delegates from Joe Biden. I don't know what the number is now as we speak.
We understand from news bulletins this morning that she does have enough delegates now for the nomination. And perhaps more importantly, as well as collecting delegates over the course of 24 hours, we also understand that she collected $80 million in campaign funding. And let's be honest, when it comes to US presidential elections, collecting dollars for campaign funding is absolutely crucial.
Oh, it's essential, sadly. Money is, U.S. politics are awash in money. And, you know, with the Supreme Court decision a few years ago, it's not likely to change anytime soon. But, yeah, no, as soon as her candidacy was, her nomination was announced, the phones rang off the hook, as they say, and the money started flowing in and continues to do so. So people are very much getting behind her. There's actually quite a bit of donations from just smaller donation, lots of people, which is also another good indication of the viability of her candidacy. And I'm sure that this is, you know, loosening the purse strings for a lot of big donors who were holding back on their support because they weren't happy with Biden continuing on ahead to seek the seek a second term.
There are some suggestions that Kamala Harris's approval rating as vice president wasn't as high as she would like it to be, and that she is still going to be closely associated with Biden and the Biden presidency, and any problems that people perceive arising from the Biden presidency. Are they hindrances that are going to block her, or do you believe that she can hit this campaign with a fresh impetus and with enough of a distinction between herself and Joe Biden for her to be able to say, I'm something new, I'm something fresh?
Well, we're seeing her now in a way that we haven't seen her over the course of the last 4 years. Hers has been a rather quiet vice presidency. She's also still vice president.
Yes.
I think there's an idea people have that Joe Biden has resigned. That's not the case. He's president for the next 6 months, as she is vice president for the next 6 months. So it's still going to be his policy, but I'd imagine that she would have a wee bit more influence now as the candidate for the Democratic ticket.
The perception is that Donald Trump would much rather have taken on Joe Biden in a campaign than take on someone like Kamala Harris.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've
Do you believe she can make
out
yeah,
there.
Can she make a credible case against Donald Trump over the course of the coming months? Because the perception is, rightly or wrongly, that Trump is in the ascendancy now. As I said earlier during the newspaper review, take nothing for granted this far out, because, I mean, when you were 4 or 5 months out from the US presidential election in 2019, nobody gave any real hope to Donald. Well, very few people gave any real hope to Donald Trump, and the assurance was, and the perception was, that all Hillary Clinton had to do was turn up and she had it won. That did not pan out the way people expected. Now people, it's the other way around. People expect Trump to triumph and don't believe that Kamala Harris will have what it takes to overtake him in the course of the next 5 months or so. You believe people who think that could be thinking very inaccurately?
I've got to say, I don't agree. I think that she has brought fresh energy to the campaign already. The way people are coalescing behind her and throwing in their support, the response that she's had amongst even the more progressive elements in the party, it all gives me hope. And I personally don't understand whatsoever and find it hard to wrap my head around why anyone would throw their support behind Trump. He is incompetent. And the bit of energy that he might have had versus Biden in that disastrous debate, he's now on the back foot. He's now the old guy in the campaign who's got cognitive issues. And Kamala Harris certainly is not. It'll be interesting to see if there will be another debate, because I think she'd wipe the floor with him, quite frankly.
The question now becomes, how will Kamala Harris do in the swing states? We know she'll take California. We know she'll take New York. We know she'll take the blue states.
Right.
We know Trump will take the red states. It's going to come down to whether it's 10 swing states, whether it's 5, whether it's even 4 swing states. Places like Pennsylvania, like Kentucky. Can Kamala Harris take those? Because we know she'll take the blue states. That isn't the issue. Her challenge now is to go to places like Pennsylvania, go to places like Kentucky.
Yes.
That's where she's got to make an impact.
Well, it's funny that you should mention specifically Pennsylvania and Kentucky, because possible vice presidential candidates are from those two states.
And that is not a coincidence.
Andy Beshear.
Yeah.
No, it's not. And we already saw yesterday in a viral moment, Andy Beshear from Kentucky coming out swinging and essentially auditioning for the role. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Shapiro in Pennsylvania, who is being touted as a possible vice presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And also Midwestern boy and Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg that name's been floated around as a possible candidate.
Caller says, I cannot wait for Kamala Harris to call out Trump as a misogynist, fraudster and convicted felon. It'll be so much more convincing and powerful than if Joe Biden had done so, especially coming from an eloquent woman from a minority grouping. This will eventually Trump Donald. That's a comment from one of our callers.
I'm with that caller 100%, because it's interesting. He's been convicted of federal federal counts, 34 of them, and she was an attorney general. She was a prosecutor in the state of California. I actually don't agree with some of her history there, shall we say, but I am excited about the prospect of there being a first female president of the United States. It's been long, long overdue. But I have been seeing a fair amount of misogyny online now that the candidate is a woman and a woman of color. There's still a lot of that, even no matter what the political leanings are. I've seen that in lefty circles as well.
Sharon McMenamin, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us today. I'm sure we'll be in touch over the course of the coming weeks and months as the campaign winds on. But for now, Sharon, thank you. And may you have many, and I suspect you will have many late nights watching American TV over the course of the next few weeks as this campaign unfolds. Sharon, thank you.
I'm trying to limit it because I need my
Oh, the closer it gets, the more you'll succumb, I strongly suspect.
This is true. Thank you,
Donald. Thank you, Sharon. Okay, you take care. Bye-bye now. Donegal County Council had one of its first plenary meetings since the new council was elected. We know that there's a lot of change in Lifford, one of the changes being the election of four members of the 100% Redress Party. And that was very much in evidence in the chamber yesterday with a motion of no confidence in the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien, moved by Councillor Thomas Sean Devine of that party. Delighted to say he joins us in studio. Thomas, good morning.
Morning, Donald, how are you?
Very well indeed. Your first motion on Donegal County Council was to move that no confidence motion in the Housing Minister. It was accepted with your own party colleagues, obviously. Sinn Féin supported you, as did, I think, all the independents, with the exception of the Caoimhleadh Councillor Kennedy. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael sought to have that motion deferred. You're happy with the way that debate went?
Oh, definitely, Donald. You know, and it's like, sad that these motions has to be brought. They start off with, you know, because we shouldn't be in the situation that the people's in, to be honest. Like, it's heartbreaking this last number of weeks, the amount of homes that I've visited today where people's, they're living with black mould, people living with COPD, mushrooms growing out of their presses with the mould's been that black. Like, it's unhealthy homes. And for the Housing Minister, he's involved in one of the biggest housing crises probably hit this country in decades. Like, it's, you know, I left me no choice when I passed up for a motion.
The argument from Councillor Brogan, articulated on behalf of Fianna Fáil, Councillor Kavanagh, backed it as well for Fine Gael. The argument was that Minister O'Brien is coming to Donegal in the coming weeks. Donegal County Council members, including yourselves, I'm sure, will be seeking to meet with him to lobby to have the scheme changed, lobby to have the IS-465 overturned and have new protocols brought in that recognise pyrrhotite and other deleterious materials as causes of defective blocks. There'll be a lot of people meeting the minister and seeking to meet the minister to effect change. And their argument was, is it really great to say just weeks before he comes, oh, by the way, we have no confidence in you?
Donald, he's coming at 4 years. He hasn't come. There's no guarantee he is coming. There's only speculation he's coming. You know, they say that there was 30,000 people marching Dublin and told them they've no confidence in him, you know, a couple of years ago. He's not. We have the Dutch report coming out here this last couple of weeks. They're revealing that he couldn't have confidence in him. You know, there's no. And in fairness to the Fianna Fáil party and Fine Gael party, standing by their man or whatever, like, that's not a case of. This was a popularity thing. Yes, they're looking for popularity and that a vote to no confidence in Dara O'Brien. They couldn't have any confidence in him, you know what I mean? That's heartbreaking. They think that some of the councillors, yes, not all independent councillors voted with or voted against it. Some of them abstained. And some of these councillors' homes is crumbling, and I can't understand it for the love of God. But the argument that Fianna Fáil was putting across yesterday that when he comes, that they're going to, there's no guarantee he's coming.
Yeah.
And if the talk of he does come, he's coming in August when the council chamber's closed. Most councillors are away on holidays and that, you know, timing. He hasn't come in 4 years. Yeah. And if he is coming, couple of months out, probably from a general election. Like, you know.
Yeah. Now, for the record, just for the listeners, I'll explain very briefly what actually happened yesterday.
Yeah.
You moved your original motion, which was that this council has no confidence in Minister Darragh O'Brien. Yeah. Councillor Brogan moved a counter-motion, which was that this motion should be deferred until after the minister visits. So that was a counter-motion. The way standing orders go is the counter-motion is taken first. So the actual vote yesterday was a vote on that this council defer a vote of no confidence in the minister until after he visits Donegal. That counter-motion fell, which meant your motion was automatically passed.
Yes.
So there wasn't specifically a debate on your motions. Just to say that, just for the, you know, for the clarity and the correctness of it, it was a 18-11 against, if I recall the figures correctly, it was 18-11 against that counter-motion. So your motion passed by default as the decision of council. I covered that meeting yesterday. I went to Liverpool after the show and covered that meeting, and it was interesting. I'd say at least 50 to 60% of the discussion all afternoon was on the defective block issue. There was a couple of motions. Yourself and your colleagues had motions in. Councillor Beard and Councillor McGee had motions in.
Yeah.
Councillor McBrearty had a motion in as well. Councillor McDermott had a motion in. Councillor McMonagall had a motion in. There were several motions on the whole issue of defective blocks.
Yeah.
You and your colleagues, Ali Farran, Joy Beard, and Dennis McGee, made the commitment when you were elected that you were going to shake things up on Donegal County Council and you were going to bring a very clear and very distinct message. The evidence from yesterday would suggest you're following through on that promise.
When I went to people's doors, I'd tell them that there's that we would fight our darn hardest. There's things we'll get wrong, there's things we're going to get right, but we'll do our darn hardest, and I'm not going to go back on my word. And the motion was brought forward yesterday because it was talking to people on the doors, talking to people that was involved in my campaign, and nobody had any confidence in Darragh O'Brien. Nobody's any confidence in the government. As fair as they say, I think people can't wait till there's a general election to see if we can get a change of government, to see if we can get things moved on that long faster. But as I say, I have to stand by the people. Like, the people elected me. Some things I won't be very popular in doing, and some things that we will. But as I say, we're there to fight for the people. We're ordinary people. We're ordinary people that live in a nightmare every day of the week. And, you know, and some of the things was brought up yesterday about water and whatever. Like, that is state of mind. I'm fighting for water in the last 10 years. Like, and we're still fighting. We're still no further forward, you know. And we have to keep fighting for people. People want to change, and I'm hoping that the Redress Party can help make that change.
The campaign is over. The work has now kicked in, and you've had your first full plenary. You've had your first full municipal district meeting. What's your perception now, and how different is actually being on council and dealing with the officials and dealing with your fellow councillors? How different is it to what you thought it might have been before you started on this campaign? I mean, and this is the final question. What is your perception of where you are now, having actually sat through a 6-hour meeting in Lifford, having sat through a 3-hour meeting in Letterkenny?
Well, to be quite honest, it is different from what I thought it was going to be honest. Now, my hope is that we're going on. I'm prepared to work with every councillor to get as much as we can get done and push things on with government, push things on whatever. And that's with every party, every individual. I'm not making any exceptions with anybody else. Work with everybody. And that's the same with all my party colleagues. Yesterday, now, it's an eye-opener. There's no question about it. We have a lot of learning to do very, very fast. Like this, we're new to this, you know. Most of the people we're dealing with, seasoned politicians, has been there 10 years or more. We have to learn very, very fast. And as I say, we're learning very, very fast. But as I say, we're there to work for the people. We're ordinary people at the end of the day, just there to do the best we can.
But certainly, as I said, on the evidence of the contributions made by yourself and your colleagues yesterday, you certainly are making an impact. And it was telling that there was so much discussion on the defective block issue in the chamber yesterday. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine, for the moment, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us.
Thank you, Donal.
We will be keeping in touch, obviously, over the course of another housing meeting
today.
Absolutely, yeah. So, as I say, we'll keep in touch. But for now, Thomas, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donal.